Hi, this is WGXC 90.7 FM, WGXC.org, transmitting from Acre in Greene County and Columbia County. We happen to be in Hudson at the moment. Also on location at Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House. And this is the day before Temesdorfer's opening. This is August 9th, and August 10th is the opening, which continues through September 29th here in Hudson. And I want to welcome Temesdorfer to the radio.
Hi, thank you for the introduction. I'm really happy to be able to speak with you about the work today.
And it's called Upstate?
It is, yeah. Upstate and a portrait of a post-industrial city along the Hudson River.
How did that come about?
Well, I am a former New Yorker. I lived in New York City for 9 years, and during the last couple years I was in New York, I started spending time in the Hudson Valley, kind of based in Germantown and exploring Hudson. And in 2014, in the summer of 2014, I moved to Montreal for my first full-time teaching position at Concordia University. I was there for 3 years. And about halfway during my time there, for a while, I had been thinking that my next project would potentially be in the Hudson area, and then I actually kind of jumped into it in the fall of 2015, and really threw myself into it in 2016, during the year which a lot of these images were made. And then in the summer of 2017, I left Montreal, moved back to the States, started a tenure track job at East Tennessee State University, and a few weeks actually before I was starting the fall semester, I was contacted by Daylight Books and asked if I'd like to do a monograph of this project, and I agreed to do that excitedly, and then sort of finished the project during the winter. So much of this project was actually developed, or all of this project was developed during my breaks from the academic semester. So while I was in Canada and then in the States, spending my, you know, winter breaks and summers and spring breaks and so on, working on this project. And the previous project that I did was shot in Patterson. It was a portrait series that I worked on for about 4.5 years, and I had sort of completed that project as I left New York City, and then exhibited it in a couple exhibitions in New York City during 2015. And there are some thematic connections between Patterson and Upstate in terms of looking at two, you know, post-industrial cities, two very historic cities, though the project in Patterson was specifically portraiture, and this body of work is largely landscapes and interiors and architectural, though I have woven in a handful of portraits to give a sense of the local community.
And you had an exhibition of Upstate in Tennessee last year.
Actually, so the this is the fourth exhibition, solo exhibition's body of work in this past year. The debut exhibition was actually at my university in the Reese Museum. It was my new faculty solo exhibition, and it was actually the largest exhibition of this work in the sense of, I think there were 25 images because there was a very large space to work with. And I got a lot of support from, you know, the university in terms of helping to kind of fund that exhibition and launch it so that I could share it in other subsequent environments.
How did you get involved in academia?
I mean, I went to graduate school in Chicago, graduated in 1998. And then did some adjunct teaching in Chicago, and then again in New York City, I was teaching at a number of schools in the New York City area. I taught at William Patterson University. I taught at College of Staten Island and Ramapo College in New Jersey, and also at the ICP throughout, the International Center of Photography, throughout most of my time there. And so that, as you know, the more and more I was teaching and enjoying teaching, I was moving in a direction of wanting to make that a full-time career. But while I was in New York City, I was also doing all kinds of, you know, freelance work and sort of developing my art career as well.
And what do you teach?
I teach photography. Yeah, I mean, my title is assistant professor of photography at ETSU. But yeah, I teach, you know, in fact, actually this Coming semester is the first time I'll be teaching a course at ETSU that's not just to photography students, that's actually a portfolio and exhibition course to the our you know BFA students ahead of having their BFA shows in the spring. So I'll be working with students in all areas in that course. But primarily I teach various levels from intro to advanced photography courses. And both we have a undergraduate program as well as a small graduate program.
Are you saying to your students you're entering a very difficult potential career ahead?
Yes. I mean, I think I give them a realistic sense of the challenges of developing a career in photography, but I also want to be encouraging that it is possible, and there are many ways to approach that. Teaching being one way to support yourself as an artist, but certainly not the only way.
Yeah, I always wonder about students I was once a photography student, but it was a different time when there seemed to be more opportunities. But now you have to, or at least in my opinion, you have to work a little harder, develop your own sense of who you are as an artist and work on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, you know, fewer full-time teaching positions, in part the universities are hiring more and more adjuncts, so that makes these full-time positions very, you know, few and competitive. So that does, you know, increase the challenge in this field, but it's certainly not impossible. I spent many, many years working towards that direction. Again, there are many people, you know, balance adjunct teaching and different kinds of work, or even work outside, you know, work as artists, but support themselves through other means. So, I mean, it's obviously a challenging field, but it's not impossible, and it's certainly a rewarding field to work in.
And we're going to talk, we're going to take a little tour in a little while here at the Hudson Hall and look at your work and talk about it. How did you produce the images in an analog sense and then to get to print?
Sure, yeah. So about half of this body of work was shot on 6:7 format and half is 4x5. I actually just got a 4x5 camera as I started this project, and the portraits are 6:7, and as was all of my Patterson project, it's a little bit easier, more comfortable for me to use that format for shooting portraits at this point, at least. But I felt like the 4x5 format was really appropriate for these larger landscapes, and also kind of connected to a photographic tradition of large format photography. And this is a very historic area. It's a project about history, and so I wanted to bring in even that historic technical process. All of this, was shot on film. I made contact sheets of all that film and then scanned images I was interested in, and eventually made, you know, high-res drum scans. So all of these are, you know, images shot on film, but then scanned and using sort of digital technology for the output and digital prints.
I would say, from my experience, using a 4x5 camera is a very purposeful process to compose and put the camera down and look at it and study it. It's like a portrait. Your landscapes do look like portraits.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I definitely think that word choice, purposeful, is a really nice way to express that experience. I became very drawn into the slow and meditative and deliberate process of working with a 4x5 camera. So in some cases, I was spending, you know, up to half an hour just setting up one of these shots. So, but it helped me become, you know, very, very intentional, I think, about that single image. And I think I was also kind of like conceptually countering the environment we live in of the constant flow of, you know, so many digital images and just kind of being bombarded by that, and wanting to kind of place a great value on a single image and the experience of shooting that single image and that very sort of slow, careful process. Because I was just, you know, sort of in the early stages of using the 4x5 when I started this project, I had to move through the many, many mistakes that are possible to make, you know, shooting large format. And, you know, now I'm teaching that to students and sort of talking to them about, you know, the just kind of working through those mistakes and accepting them. And, you know, eventually this gets easier and more like second nature. But it was, yeah, it was very rewarding for me to kind of move into large format, and it felt very appropriate to this body of work.
Yeah, I would say telling students don't be afraid to fail is very important.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just this past spring taught a color photography class at ETSU that has a component, a large format component, and again, I mean, I said what you just said, don't be afraid to fail, and that you learn from these mistakes, and it does get easier. And I was actually incredibly impressed with the results that they got back from that assignment, and everybody managed. I mean, they only shot, you know, 5 sheets of film for that particular assignment, and I thought, you know, if even one or two of these comes back well exposed, you know, in focus, that's an accomplishment. And I actually got some excellent images, so that was great.
Now, I did see a lecture that you did where you talked about some of your very first photography traveling with your family. How did that come about?
Yeah, you might be talking specifically about that gas station photograph I think I referred to, and that was shot in northern Michigan. And that was actually a really important image for me in terms of shaping the direction of an earlier body of work that I call American Stills. Prior to that, I'd done a number of documentary projects in Chicago, and then I was sort of moving into more of a landscape series in the American Stills project, and starting to put my camera on a tripod and actually doing what I'm doing now 4x5, but then, you know, initially that was 35 millimeter and then medium format and then 4x5. And so I've sort of the process of working with longer exposures and having the camera on the tripod, that sort of started with the American Stills series. But yeah, I grew up in Michigan, and you know, I started photography when I was sort of towards the end of high school, and then studied photography at Oberlin College. I was an art major, but that was my real passion. And then went on to study at, you know, a graduate level in Chicago. And then, you know, so some of my earlier bodies of work are shot in the Midwest.
What was your very first photograph?
Well, I would say when I took my first photography class, which was at the Kalamazoo Art Institute, our first assignment was to actually shoot a roll of slide film, because it's actually, you know, a learning experience to try. You have less latitude when you're shooting slide film, so you have to be more precise about making exposures. And then our teacher projected, you know, the slides in our first critique. And I think one of the first image that I remember is a portrait of one of my best friends, who's now one of my best friends, and her name is Kiko, and it was a portrait that we shot in the cemetery. I was in high school, but there was actually a very beautiful quality of light, and it was a memorable image, and I did get a lot of positive feedback from my photo teacher at the KIA, and it was encouraging, and I mean, I was captivated by photography immediately.
It's always good to have a good mentor.
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean, he was just one of many mentors to come over the years, including my, you know, professor at Oberlin College, including professors I had at graduate school at, you know, the University of Illinois, and then mentors that I've had as, you know, faculty, as colleagues.
And now you're a mentor.
Well, that would be a privilege and an honor to be a mentor for whoever might make that claim.
Do you do any curating?
I have done curating, actually, and when I still lived in New York City, for about 5 years, I was an online curator for a website called Culture Hall. It was an online project where there were online exhibitions of selected artists' works, and often surrounding a theme. So I put together collaboratively a number of these online exhibitions. And then I also did a physical exhibition that sort of spawned from one of those online exhibitions that was at the what is now called the Baxter Street Camera Club of New York. And that that online exhibition was called Other Places, and then that was the title of the exhibition at the CCNY, and that was featuring work about LGBT issues and communities.
Do you see any trends with your students as to their desire to document their photography through what they see and feel?
Yeah, I mean, because I've worked in so many different kinds of environments, say from College of Staten Island to the ICP to Concordia University of Montreal to now Tennessee, certainly students are drawing from very different landscapes, socioeconomic groups, cultural aspects of their communities. So it's been very interesting to see these differences. And I've worked with student bodies that are coming from very different places in their own backgrounds. And so, from very, very sophisticated privileged students to students who are, first generation college students. And I've had a very talented student at ETSU who's made a strong documentary project this year about incarceration and drug addiction. This is based in, the experience of the people that she's grown up with. So, certainly in that region, there are some very powerful, subjects that students are dealing with and drawing from their own personal lives.
Well, getting back to upstate, being that you live in Tennessee and you've been a lot of different places, you could have gone many different places. And what were some of the draws coming here to the Hudson Valley and the Hudson?
I had a lot of familiarity with this area personally ahead of starting to shoot this project. So I'd already been spending, my breaks here for personal reasons and really falling in love with this area, but falling in love with it both, the beauty but also the history of this area just really made a deep impression on me. And I felt like the potential to kind of move from my Patterson work and continue to explore, post-industrial environment, that was very rich here. When I was in Canada, I realized in time that really how American my work is, and that America is the subject of my work. And I wasn't beyond doing one sort of commission project where I contributed to a larger project about homelessness and photographed homeless shelters for a project called Where Do You Sleep that I did in Montreal. Aside from that, I realized that my work is in the United States. And so Hudson was my home base in the States at that time. It was a place that I was capable of spending, longer periods of time to actually develop a body of work. But it was just a place that I felt a deeper connection to, both personally and intellectually and artistically.
Was it difficult to take all of the images that you created to bring it down to this exhibition?
Do you mean to edit the edit that you're seeing here at Hudson Hall? Well, this edit is largely the same edit that I showed at Tracy Morgan Gallery in Asheville. Tracy Morgan represents my work, and she's a gallery that she has a background in New York City and moved to Asheville a few years ago and opened a really wonderful gallery that creates an amazing photo community in that region. And so Tracy and I, from the 25 pieces that I had exhibited at the Reese Museum, created an edit of images for her gallery space, and then I 17 of those 18 images are on display here. So some of that process of deciding what would be the edit had preceded, exhibiting the work here.
And how did the accompanying book take place?
Daylight had written to me just as I was starting my position at ETSU, and it's a publishing company that I've been aware of for many years and that I've admired the books that they've published and know quite a number of the artists that they've worked with. And I had even thought about, over the years that they would be a great publisher to work with should I publish a book. So it made a lot of sense to me when I got that email from them. I was like, well, this is a good fit, and this does make sense. And I wasn't yet feeling like I was entirely done with that body of work. So again, I spent the winter ahead of the book going in, starting the book design and the layout in the spring. I spent the winter completing this project, and there were some specific themes that I wanted to finish. I felt like I wanted more images that reflected Hudson's industrial past. So I spent a number of the factory images I shot during that winter, and another image that is in the book, it's not on the wall now, but was included in the Reese Museum exhibition, is an interior of the Fergery Shacks. And I have two exterior shots in the book, and one of the, the exterior shots is on the wall here. And it was really important to me to try to get inside those shacks. That was actually challenging, but I sort of persistently contacted the mayor, and eventually the mayor's assistant spoke with the mayor, and I was able to get access and get inside. And so that was something, knowing the book was ahead, that I was sort of determined to make happen, was to get inside the shacks. And I'm really glad that I did, because it's actually one of my favorite images in the body of work.
So right now you and I are sitting in an off room off the main hall. Is there any significance between the two spaces as to the work itself?
Well, when we laid out the work this week, each space that I've worked with, there's been a similar but slightly different placement of the images. I mean, I'm considering things like seasons and palettes and themes of absence or decay, or whatever it is that I'm sort of connecting from smaller groups of photographs. So they have to, when we were working on laying out I didn't know, sort of immediately until I was in the space, where these images are going to be placed. But I'm sort of, each exhibit is sort of almost like a site-specific installation where there's a new puzzle to figure out how to put those pieces together and make it make sense in that unique space. And I'm really thrilled to be in this building, because as this is one of the most historic buildings in Hudson. It makes a lot of sense for me, and I'm really honored that I can be, have this work exhibited in a place that itself has so much history and is really about celebrating Hudson, the community of Hudson, the history of Hudson. So, for me to have the work here is thrilling.
You want to get up and start with an image, and we'll talk about it? You choose.
Well, why don't we start in the beginning? Because to some extent, the flow of the exhibition mirrors the flow of the book.
Now we're in the main hall of Hudson Hall.
So we're starting with the river's edge, which is actually on the cover of the book. And I chose this image for the cover because it incorporated a number of aspects that kind of tie in the whole project. I mean, you see the river, you see the mountains, the water tower sort of reflects this industrial past. A lot of my work was shot during the winter, and there's sort of a there's a very specific like mood and palette. So this really introduces, I think, the feel of the book, or the feel of the body of work.
It's definitely probably one of the strongest industrial images.
Yeah, I mean, and I think for those who know Hudson, for themselves, who actually know Hudson, I mean, everybody would be, it's something almost iconic. Like that is a site that anybody who knows Hudson would recognize. So it does kind of anchor it in a certain Hudson iconography, without hopefully being too, postcard-like or sentimental.
Not at all.
Okay.
Let's go to another
okay,
one.
Okay, so then this image of the river, the Hudson River, I so this to me ties into the Hudson River, the painters, that tradition. Mm. And I actually was searching for a long time to figure out how to find a vantage point that would sort of replicate that school of art. And this is actually very similar to the view from Alana. This is below Alana, but it's on that side of the river. Alana would be up a little bit higher. And I've actually visited Alana, and I have, you know, sort of conceived of images there, but it was too far away. And so I was able to get closer. But this would be the perspective, the point of view of the river. However, this is to some extent less of an idealized image of the river because of the incorporation of these kind of old, factory sites. But this is from the Hudson side looking across at Catskills.
It's a very typical view, as you did. You look deeply at it, where some people just sort of mindlessly look, and you purposefully got it.
A lot of this project was about just location scouting, like searching for vantage points and having ideas of themes and sites and moods and so on, but just spending hours and hours and hours driving around to find, spots where I could actually, convey those things that I was trying to convey.
That was fun, I bet.
Definitely, very fun. Yeah, I have great memories of just spending so many hours, driving around the Hudson Valley or, within, most of these are within a half an hour of Hudson. So I was trying to keep this anchored, and Hudson is sort of the center of the project, but a lot of these images are shot in smaller rural communities surrounding Hudson. For example, this next image in Livingston, New York, which is, about 20 minutes from Hudson. But this is one of the images I mentioned before. This is of a cement, sand, and gravel plant. And it's actually, this factory is still operational, unlike some of the other buildings that I, photographed for this project. Again, I was, definitely interested in photographing it in this winter setting and kind of, these images were hung together in part because of the connections between the industrial sites, and also in part because of just the use of color and the palette in that image and the quality of light.
Yeah, I live in Livingston, and I don't recognize that, so that means I'm going to have to do some driving around to find it.
It's near the retirement, or the nursing home, the
near Route 19 and Route 9.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Livingston Hills is what I was trying to think of. Yeah, exactly. And so one of the things I'll mention that was really important to the project was time of day. In terms of the feelings that I wanted to evoke with these images and the kind of color palettes I wanted to work with, that had everything to do with when they were shot. So this one of the fire is shot at dusk, and there's a sort of a play between the sort of rich warmth of the fire and the coolness of the lake and the snow and the sky at dusk. But I did most of this project very, very early in the morning or late afternoon into early dusk to get the kind of quality of light that I wanted. So in some cases I would actually, wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to try to get this sort of short window of time when there is that really beautiful light in the morning. And there are a number of pieces, throughout the exhibition were shot very early morning, but this one, was shot in the Livingston area at dusk.
Who started that fire?
They're burning an apple orchard. So that's not an uncommon sight to see in these more sort of rural surroundings of, crops being burned at the end of a season. So
we call it a controlled burn.
Okay, exactly. and then these two images that I've hung together, I think through all the exhibitions and are in proximity to one another in the book, are both reflecting the more urban aspect, downtown Hudson. So this was shot on Allen Street. And this building on the left is actually a very historic building. I've been told that it was even, in its earliest manifestation, a whale oil refinery. Hudson's earliest economy was from, you know, whaling and as a seaport.
That always shocks a lot of people.
Yeah, actually. And I've had people, you know, disbelieve that it has that history, but many things I've read have kind of spoken to that aspects of its history, and that was how it, you know, initially rose as an important American city. But I also wanted to just show the very ordinary housing. One of the things I read when I was working on this project is that within this very small, you know, city, ultimately in terms of its population and you know, spread, there are the most varied forms of American architecture within a few square miles of anywhere in the United States. And so, but including that, this is just the very ordinary kind of working class architecture of Hudson, which, you know, as you know, from block to block, we're experiencing very different from the very grand to the very humble.
It's a crazy quilt of architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. And then this white car, which was photographed in front of a hair salon near the park in downtown Hudson, that was, you know, I just spotted that driving and just, you know, sort of jumped out of the car and quickly set up my tripod and did these, you know, night shots. But for me, that, even, you know, ahead of starting this project, instead of shooting, one of the artists I thought of a lot, you know, here specifically was Hopper, and how so many scenes just this in this era just evoked Hopper paintings for me. And Hopper's been someone, you know, an artist whose work I've admired and who has certainly influenced a lot of photographers whose work I've admired. So Hopper's been, you know, work that I've been looking at for a very long time, but even very much so with this project. And so this I think, in some ways connects to that Hopper tradition in terms of, you know, the use of light, the solitude, the kind of, you know, empty environment and the mood that is evoked in the image.
Americana.
Yeah. and this is also shot in Livingston, actually not far from, you know, the factory that we were speaking about before. This was shot inside a small, there are a collection of shacks, which I speculate were possibly for migrant workers. The shacks are now, you know, probably haven't been lived in for many, many years and are, as you know, as you can see, in a state of decay. But one of the interests to me in this project was looking for the relics and the things kind of left behind, the things that reflected the fact that there had been human presence there at some point. In this case, you know, the hangers that are still on the wall and obviously the bed in that room. So there's a sense of, you know, what once was there.
Yeah. Which is sad.
Right. I mean, there is a pathos to the entire body of work because it is about, you know, decay and absence and in some cases decline, but also, you know, beauty as well.
And if we come back to Hudson in 20 years, some of these images may be what's left of what was.
Right. Well, interestingly, you know, some of them you almost think, well, that might be there in that state forever. But since I've revisited a few of the locations that I've, you know, some of the things are actually gone. I mean, there are a few buildings and sites that I photographed that you know, there's a building that's portrayed in the book, and that building burned down a few years ago. And so now that site, that's near the Fergery Shacks. And that building is now just flattened entirely. So not everything here is going to stay in this state, you know, forever.
That's true. So we're going more rural in a way.
This is in Germantown. So Germantown is where I stay when I'm in this area, and that's because of a very, very close friend who's like family to me, and she will, she's 90, and she'll be here tomorrow for the opening. Her name is Mary Foskett Elliott, and the book is actually dedicated to her. So I have stayed in her home in Germantown since 2012, and that's, you know, how I started to, you know, really get to know the region. And she also got to know this area in part you know, initially through her driving around with her, through her stories, through her knowledge of history, and sort of her, I think, you know, infectious passion for this area. So she's a formerly, you know, she used to live in New York City like so many people here, and she's a creative person. She was a theater and television actress, and eventually she started spending more and more time in the Hudson area. So yeah, and so we'll move on to this larger image of the brown Dodge, and this is shot on 9 headed to Albany. So you know, sort of before, that was kind of the furthest reaches that I would get north of Hudson, sort of, you know, just this Castleton on the Hudson, which is a very small, you know, community a little bit south of Albany. But this is, you know, this is one of, like, many of these sites that I would visit over and over again and photograph at different times a day. And, you know, sometimes just drive to and look at, and if that particular quality of light, you know, wasn't interesting at that time, I wouldn't photograph it then, and I would, and that is actually a process that is true of many, many of these images, that it's not like this one time that I was at this location, but this might be one of, you know, 20 times that I've been at this location, but it's the process of re-photographing or waiting till, you know, that there's a particular quality of light, because it's so much of, you know, as I've said already, the experience of this work is about, you know, light and color and time of day. And this is an image of the rear bedroom in the Oliver Bronson house, which is very close to us right now. It's essentially just up the street on the old prison, or on the prison property. So unlike a lot of these images where I'm just kind of showing up and setting up my tripod and exploring or even walking into an abandoned shack, this was a very different experience in the sense that I have to get access to photograph in the space, and I contacted the Hudson Historical Society and arranged to be able to photograph in the space. Someone actually told me, you know, who was watching this work in progress, this was kind of a lead in saying, oh, I think you'd be very interested in photographing inside this home. So on, you know, with that sort of suggestion, I became curious about it and looked at pictures of it online. I knew about, you know, occasionally there are chamber concerts in the space, but largely it's just kind of closed off most of the time. So in the fall of 2016, on one of my sort of fall break, I was visiting this area. I did get the opportunity to photograph in that. And I mean, the whole house is sort of spectacular in the sense of, you know, this formerly very grand space, and just there's, you know, layers and layers and layers of history. I mean, I think it was built in the, you know, early 1800s, and many people have, you know, lived in this home, and it's just gone through so much transition. But the wallpaper just spoke, you know, volumes to me about the history, and I really love the, you know, the color palettes that you see looking from, you know, room to room.
It does go room to room, which
right. I mean, each room is sort of remarkable, but this is the room that captivated me the most, and I literally spent hours in that room taking, you know, most of these images aren't just the only sort of perspective, but that I would photograph it from, you know, different angles and points of view and so on until I kind of got that right sense of composition.
So we're now at the last image in this room, but it'll be the first one on the right when you enter the hall.
Right. So this is the yellow house, and I think if there is one single image that you know, people have responded to in this body of work, this seems to be the one that, you know, has kind of been celebrated by people. And this house is actually very close to where I stay in Germantown. This is on Wire Road. And it has been empty, you know, ever since I became aware of it, and I think probably potentially for decades. And I have photographed it, you know, at a number of different times, but this was the most interesting experience of the landscape in conjunction with the house. So this was actually shot during the summer, and when I arrived, there was a blue sky, but as I set up my 4x5 camera, this very dramatic summer storm settled in. And I mean, one of the things that I love about the Hudson Valley is just the experience of landscape, the experience of the skies, the colors, just the drama and so on. And I think this image captures a little bit of that kind of remarkable quality of sort of light and weather and the Hudson Valley. I mean, just last night in Germantown, we lost power and then I wake up and, you know, in the morning and there's this incredible, there's a view from Mary's home of acres of fields, and there's this incredible mist in the early morning. So there's just so many like beautiful qualities of the landscape here.
Let's go into that last room, and I'm curious, do you expect to continue this upstate project?
This body work is done for me, it's resolved. I mean, I definitely expect to continue to spend time upstate. I mean, I'm very attached to the community and to being here, but I have already started another project. Now that I'm based in the South, I want to make a body, or I am in the early stages of making a body of work that is set in the South, and sort of the gist of this new project is about exploring the settings of Southern writers' novels and short stories and the places that they grew up and the landscapes and environments that they were inspired by. So I've started to make a series of road trips to different places, like, for example, where Flannery O'Connor spent the later part of her life in Milledgeville, Georgia. I've been to Oxford, Mississippi a couple times, where Faulkner lived, and to Mineralville, Alabama, where Truman Capote and Harper Lee were actually childhood friends and so on. So this is kind of a long-term project, but I'm kind of committed now to a new project in a new region.
Good. Keep moving on.
So, like I said, there are just a few portraits in the body of work, but I did want to bring in show some aspects of the local community. This is Mike, who is an auto mechanic, and I discovered him and approached him near where that brown Dodge was photographed in Castleton on the Hudson, and he's actually standing in a garage, but because of the darkness of the garage, it feels almost like a studio portrait. Mm-hmm. But my portraiture style tends to be fairly, very much emphasized on the subject and kind of minimizing a sense of the environment. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of style that I developed when I was shooting the Patterson project. This image here is of a diner in Elizaville. Elizaville is fairly close to Germantown, is another kind of small, small town, and has this quintessential old American diner. And I photographed both the exterior and the interior, but this one spoke to me the most about the cup left on the table and the sense of someone that has been there but is gone, and I love the all of the elements of this kind of the red leather seats, the jukebox, and
I want to slip in and order some eggs and toast or something.
Well, I've eaten there a couple times, actually. Yeah. And it's close to the Twin Lakes, which are, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but yes. There's a really nice place to swim. So that was a nice discovery. and this is one, this winter path was shot, as I was saying before, very, very early in the morning. So that moment of that kind of quality of light, that coolness, that sort of blue tone and almost solemn, kind of very quiet solemn, that would change in less than an hour of when that photograph is taken. So that's why I had to get up so early and be out there for with this short window, and then that window would end, and then it would stop having that same magic for me, and then I wouldn't photograph again until the evening. But this was one of the very early morning pictures.
That takes a very special eye, I think, to capture something like that, because it's essentially perfect.
Well, thank you. I think that's, again, a lot of this book is about a mood, and if the light didn't exist in the appropriate way to kind of convey that mood, then, you know, I wouldn't take the picture until, you know, it was right.
Yeah
exactly. And then this picture of the deer, I think this, to me, this is about that, you know, phenomena of the rural landscape where it's not uncommon to have these sites of, you know, sort of explicit death, and to see, you know, things that might seem sort of gruesome in the city but are really part of our, you know, rural American environment. And there's a kind of a solemn quality, obviously, in this, mm-hmm. this image as well. So all of these are speaking about, you know, life that was once there that is now gone. And that's what could connect these
Perfect.
Seemingly disparate images. Yeah. and then finally, we're arriving at the Ferguson shack. So I had talked about that before, and that this is a former kind of fishing and hunting village, and it's existed for many, many, many years. And it's only kind of in, I think, like in very recent years that the city finally, you know, shut these down and boarded them up. And the last I know from reading articles, even in the New York Times, there's been a lot of controversy in the city about what to do with these shacks, whether to tear them down and just develop something new, or to preserve these shacks as one of the kind of remaining parts of Hudson's story. And I know it's, and also, you know, what I experienced in visiting these shacks over and over and over again, as I was, you know, sort of looking for those different qualities of light and time today and so on, many people would just come down to this area and stand near these shacks and just kind of, like, they were coming to visit the shacks. And if I talked to people, sometimes they would tell me, oh, my uncle or my grandfather or whatever, like, used to, you know, or I, you know, used to, you know, they would say, used to spend time in these shacks. So a lot of people have their own personal stories and experiences there and are really attached to them. So I don't actually know right now what the, you know, the current status is with that kind of debate about what to do. I certainly think they're a very kind of vivid part of that old Hudson. It would be very sad, you know, for me to see them gone.
Well, who knows what's going to happen?
I don't know.
But you have it documented here wonderfully.
Thank you. And then, you know, the final image, I guess, is this other portrait of Reggie, who a lot of people who live in Hudson would recognize Reggie, because he's very present in the Hudson community. He comes to a lot of openings. He's a very outgoing person.
Very eclectic artist.
Yes, yeah. So I met him and took this picture in he had a shop for many years on Columbia, and he sold, you know, like antiques and various things. And so I thought he was a very kind of striking and interesting looking person, and approached him years ago, so this was in 2016, and then have since gotten to know him better and have brought him one of these portraits, and hoping that he has an opportunity to come see this exhibition.
If he's here, he will be here.
Okay.
So let's take a final sit down and talk a little bit, since we're getting to the end of our lovely conversation. So also the upstate, would you say a monogram?
Monograph?
Yeah.
Or book.
Or both. That will be also available here for sale?
It is. It will be available here at Hudson Hall for the duration of the show. It's also available through me, through my website. It's available through Daylight, through the website. It's on a number of, websites such as Amazon and beyond. But But yeah, I mean, certainly during the show, it'd be wonderful if people were interested in the book if they purchased it through Hudson Hall. But then it will still be available beyond that.
And what is your website, Tema?
So my website is www.temastauffer, which is TEMASTAUFFER.com.
Are you also on Instagram?
I am on Instagram, and I'm also on Facebook.
What do you find as a social media platform the best that works for you?
I am enjoying Instagram right now. I mean, I've been on Facebook for probably a decade and feel a little, it's certainly useful for me professionally to kind of put the word out about my show, but I'm a little more interested in the experiencing photography on Instagram. And so that platform, I actually just got on Instagram 2 years ago, so I'm a relative newcomer. But I really enjoy experiencing photographs there online more than almost anywhere, outside of websites, which ultimately I think is the nicest presentation, certainly, of a photographer's curated work.
Now, you'll be here for tomorrow's opening reception. And then back to Tennessee, I guess.
I'm headed back to Tennessee on Sunday. I have, my semester starts very soon. We start the last week of August ahead of Labor Day, so I'm going to be jumping back into school mode relatively quickly.
And that'll be a happy thing. It sounds like you enjoy.
I do enjoy it a great deal, yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to the fall semester and see my colleagues and working with, some students I've worked with already and some new ones as well.
Any other exhibitions?
The next exhibition that I'm involved with in is called Coined in the South, and that opens at the Mint Museum in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that opening is on October 10th. It's a group show, so all of the artists included in the show are based in the South. The work is not necessarily about the South, because I'm going to be showing two of the upstate photographs at a very large scale in that show.
As a photographer, work that you've produced many, many years ago, is it something that you like to revisit, or are you just one who just wants to keep going and showing new work?
Well, I would say some of both, in the sense that certainly my previous projects are connected to, each new project is somewhat picking up on themes that are important to me and that run throughout all my projects. And I'm always happy to have the opportunity to exhibit, older bodies of work as well. For example, at ETSU, the past 2 years, I've exhibited some of my Patterson portraits in an annual exhibit that's we have a different jury each year for an exhibit called Fletcher, and that's about socially and politically engaged art. So I've shown the Patterson work in that the past 2 years. But that said, my great interest right now is actually now embarking on this new project that I was mentioning about, photographing the South and exploring these this kind of literary, legacy in that area.
Are you a writer, perchance?
I have written a great deal about photography over the years. So yes, in the sense that, while I was in New York City, I was writing for American Photo Magazine. I was writing featuring exhibitions. I wrote for PDN, EDU. I wrote extensively for Culture Hall. So these online features that I mentioned, I was writing, sort of essays to accompany these features. So I've written over the years a great deal about photography.
Are you good at writing about your own photography?
I think that's always the challenging for every artist, to write about their own work. I've tried to and talk to my students about being able to step back and really think try to write about the work, almost separate yourself from it and write about the work itself rather than feeling like it's so much about you and who you are, but try to separate yourself and write about the work and what the work is. And I think for me, and I think for some students as well, having a little bit of that distance to be less me-focused and more work-focused, and that might help you, So I've certainly struggled to write to write about my work over the years, but I think I've gotten a little better about it as I've certainly written about more other people's work and just written more about photography over the years, but also just, you know, found ways to try to focus on, you know, the content of the work and the descriptions of the work and so on without feeling like I, you know, it's all about who I am as an artist.
It's another art form, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, it's something that I'll be actually working with students on this year in that class that I mentioned, that portfolio and exhibition class. I mean, a component of the class is working on artist statements and project statements and you know, being able to prepare to get your work out in the world.
And you're doing it here in Hudson.
Thank you.
So I'd like to thank you, Tema, for a wonderful conversation about your work upstate here at Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House. Opens August 10th through September 29th, and it's a beautiful show.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate getting to talk to you about the work.
Thank you.